This episode of the UAV Digest is sponsored by Go Engineer, provider of design, engineering, and 3D printing solutions for the aerospace and unmanned vehicles industries. To learn more, visit theuavdigest.com/goengineer. And by UAV Propulsion Tech, a provider of propulsion, servo, autopilots, and rescue and recovery parachute solutions for the unmanned aerial vehicle market. For more information, check out www.uavpropulsiontech.com. You're listening to episode 100 of the UAV Digest. I'm Max Flight in Hartford, Connecticut.
And I'm David Vanderhoof in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. Congratulations there, my friend. Who knew that this little project was going to turn into 100 episodes?
Never thought we would see the day. I'm glad we have, and I think there's a lot more left to talk about. So that's pretty exciting.
Yeah, hopefully our listeners still appreciate our ramblings after 100 episodes.
I think we're certainly more informed now than we were 100 episodes ago, but we'll talk about that shortly.
Yeah, and we also have a really good interview. Last weekend, we spent time together, and literally, not by Skype, we were in person at Innovations of Flight Day at the Smithsonian Udvar-Hazy Center. And we've become friends with their curator, Roger Connor, who handles the curation for UAVs. So like we did last year, we brought you another interview with Roger giving an update on what the world of UAVs is like for the Smithsonian.
Yeah, and first, let's see, we're going to take kind of a look back at where we've come the last couple of years, the last 100 episodes anyway, and maybe looking forward at what David and I anticipate being the big issues, well, during our next 100 episodes.
We've come a long way. This show, as well as the environment that we talk about. So I guess let's start back. Mr. Peabody, you want to throw the Wayback Machine to August 16th, 2013?
Here we go. Episode number one. Yeah, 2013. David, maybe you can just relate briefly for our listeners why we started the UAV Digest.
Why? Because we got sick of talking about UAVs on Airplane Geeks.
That's right. We didn't want to monopolize that show, huh?
No, and that's actually, folks, the simplest term. Max and I do record another show called Airplane Geeks, and if you haven't listened to it, we recommend it. But as we went on, more and more each week, there was a UAV story. And it wasn't really the population that was conducive for doing a UAV story. Max and I have both talked about doing other shows. I did a small that faded quickly single show about military aviation. And Max had done some other shows besides his Runway Girl Network. But he did a one about making podcasting. And we wanted to do something a little different than Airplane Geeks. And UAVs were a topic. And my personal opinion was there was more to it than at the time, what seemed like every time the word UAV came up, there was a picture of a Predator firing a Hellfire drone, even though it was somebody talking about a small hexacopter or an octocopter. So there had to have been more out there than that. And we wanted to explore that, to find the good in UAVs. And I think we've succeeded over the years. What do you think?
Yeah, I think that that was one of our early objective, certainly, and it really has continued to this day, was to identify good uses for unmanned aircraft. People out there doing great research, people out there applying these in good ways, productive ways, socially acceptable ways, all of that kind of thing. And while we have touched on some of the military aspects of drones from time to time, that really hasn't been our focus, and I think commercial applications remains our primary focus. But we've come a long way. Remember, David, at the beginning, we had to have a conversation about, are we going to call them drones? Are we going to call them UAVs? Or are we going to adopt what the FAA uses, the term that the FAA uses, UAS? It was a big topic of conversation at the beginning. Certainly, a lot of people didn't think that the drone word, was appropriate. But that we kind of settled on that.
The industry sort of took it upon itself to make it its own, to convert the negative connotation to a more realistic or maybe positive connotation. Though next week, to give a hint up of our guest next week, there is a commentation where they do not use the term drone outside the United States. They prefer using UAS because drone still has a negative connotation out there. But that's for next week. But yeah, we didn't know what we didn't know, I jokingly say at the time, Max, right? We were like, exactly. Okay, where do we even start?
And the FAA gave us a lot of starting points. We saw these applications, commercial applications. We saw lots of people who wanted to begin commercial applications, whether it's video for real estate or even search and rescue back then, many, many other agriculture, of course, many, many uses. And for a good while, the FAA really wasn't providing much in the way of guidance or direction. Certainly without having any regulations, that's kind of problematic.
Yeah, and one of the other joking things that we've said over the last 2 years was, you didn't tell me that when I was going to start the show that I was going to need to have a law degree or I was going to learn a hell of a lot about law. We've learned a lot of vocabulary. I mean, over the last 6 months, I guess the initials NPRM have dominated our conversation, but we still look to find the good in the UAVs. And I guess over 100 episodes, one of the best things that have come out of it is we have a great listener component. And you guys should all be proud of yourself. And you guys make it happen for us because you're constantly sending us stories from around the world that maybe we wouldn't see or find so that we can bring you global news. And we learn new definitions every day. And I think that's part of the fun part about it. I know that I enjoy learning new things. It's not something I get out of doing the other podcast as much as I like writing the history segments. In this case, every day I reach out, I learn something new, be it people, places, or things, because this is such a broad subject.
Another thing that maybe we can mention, David, again with the FAA, is that as we progress through these first 100 episodes, we saw activity from the FAA. It kind of took a while to be visible. I think the FAA was working behind the scenes, as it were, for quite a while, but we just didn't see that. And we saw them eventually establish the UAS test centers, for example. We saw the exemption process, the Section 333 exemption process, things like that. And then leading up to the NPRM, the Notice of Proposed Rulemaking, where we finally got to see the FAA's proposed regulations and also had an opportunity to comment on them. It's a little frustrating that it may take some time before we see the next step in that regulatory process, where the FAA stirs in the comments, those that they wish to, I guess, and come back with a revised set of regulations, the proposal, or maybe it'll end up being exactly the same. I guess we don't really know.
No, but it's been a fun ride. We don't know what we don't know, and we've got a lot to talk about. And things have changed. I mean, now you see somebody mention a drone, and there's a picture of a DJI Phantom plastered over it. So we definitely have had fun because we've learned as the industry's learned and grown it. And talking about things like we've had guests on to talk about precision agriculture. We've had guests on to talk about videography and all of the sidelines that you things that we've learned because we're dealing with drones and it's such a disruptive technology. It's been fun.
Well, one other thing that we've done, and this maybe can transition us from talking about where we've been the last 100 episodes to some of the things that we think may be important in the next 100 episodes, is that we've continued to show or illustrate examples of bad use of unmanned aircraft and talking about the implications of that. We had one just yesterday, I guess, where some fixed-wing aircraft engaged in aerial firefighting over some wildfires in Southern California encountered what's been described as a hobby drone. And the result of that, they landed the plane. They discontinued the firefighting activities because somebody was flying a, well, I don't know what, but some kind of a, you know, quote, drone in the same airspace. Another example of bad behavior. But I think, David, maybe this could be the kind of issue that defines where we may be headed in the future. It's well, you said it's maybe only a matter of time before we have some kind of serious incident.
And that sort of leads me to my pet peeve video of the week that I put in the show. Was someone sent me a video showing a hexacopter taking out the winglet of a 737, to which I went, well, I knew that was going to happen eventually. And unfortunately, I was looking at my phone, so I couldn't tell that the winglet didn't say Southwest, but another production company, a special effects company. And they had did this as a special effects kind of prank, and it got released out into the general public. I really don't want to promote this jackass's publicity stunt, but I do think it's fair to show everybody so they know when they have other people come up to them and go, did you see? You'll have the ability to say, no, that was fake. But yeah, we've got a long way to go. We've got the exemptions to come out on a fairly consistent basis now, but we still don't know what the FAA is going to regulate. Amazon swears up and down before the end of the year they're going to be delivering aircraft packages by drones.
I'm pessimistic on that one. I can just, you know, I like to be optimistic generally when we talk about new technology and applications of new technology. I mean, you can always think of reasons why not, or you can always think of potential roadblocks to implementing something new. But, well, and generally, I like to sort of, you know, push past those because, you know, we always find a way. But when I think about package delivery by drone, I mean, there's just so many issues, safety issues, people, you know, noise issues. There are many things. So I'm a little pessimistic, but yeah, I definitely agree with you, David, that that's a story. Package delivery, it's a story that we'll be talking about quite a bit, I think, over the course of the next 100 episodes.
And I think we're going to be talking more and more about mishaps and misuses, unfortunately. But part of our job as an industry is to educate so that we can minimize that. There are two classes of people. There are the people who don't know and then the people who do know and deliberately violate it. It's like laser pointers up at airliners. Some people think it's pretty funny and they should all know that it's illegal. But some people might not know that they shouldn't be flying a drone within 5 miles of an airport. And they might just get one for Christmas or they get it for their birthday and they take it out and they go flying. It's our job to educate them so that we can minimize the fear. I mean, and that was another reason why we did this show, was when we were dealing with so many pilots who kept saying to us, they're going to take out a general aviation airplane and that'll be it. And mm-hmm. And there has to be more to it than that. We have to work as an industry to educate people on, you can't prevent the loss of life or loss, but you sure as heck can mitigate it. I'm starting to sound like the insurance agent that I am. And mitigation is really something this industry needs to work on. We've got a lot of people out there who fly safe, fly smart. there's a lot of people who don't know how to fly safe and fly smart. And I think that will be one of the challenges we'll talk about over the next 100 episodes.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree completely. It's that awareness. How do we, and when I say we, I mean, yeah, it's the industry, but that also includes the regulators and the legislators, as well as the manufacturers and pretty much every stakeholder in the unmanned industry has to look at how do we generate the awareness that's necessary to maintain a safety culture when it comes to flying these things. Now, I think something that we'll be talking about is that micro UAS category that the FAA kind of hinted around in the NPRM. I think that we need a micro UAS category or a toy category, if you know you want to call it that. Things that are so small that you just don't, you know, you just don't worry about them. They don't represent a real risk. But for things from the you know Phantom class and bigger, we need to have that degree of awareness as to how you fly safely in an airspace that can have a variety of different aircraft in it. Another thing I think David will be talking about is the technology as it develops. We know that there are a lot of people working on a lot of different technological aspects of this that facilitate commercial applications, including things like sense and avoid. We've seen some great ideas and thoughts and things that are being developed in that area, but I think this is going to be a big one that's going to be very important to integration.
And the other thing, another integration sort of standard is while it's being used a lot for people doing like racing, like we talked about a couple of episodes ago, first-person view is going to be a technology that for commercial operations is going to have to get certified by the FAA. And I think that's going to be a technology that's going to develop. And that goes hand in hand with the sense and avoid. So those two aspects, I think, will be working on changing the industry.
Yep, for sure. Well, any other big things that you can think of, David, that might be topics for us going forward? I think there's a lot of ground that we'll cover. I think that we'll be able to look more detail at some particular kinds of applications like precision agriculture and others that we know are going to represent big users of drones from a commercial standpoint, but anything else you can think of?
Off the top of my head, no, but that's part of the fun of this, is if you told us we'd be talking about some of the things we talk about now 100 episodes ago, I would have told you were nuts.
Yeah. It's a discovery, isn't it? And that's, I think, David, that's what you and I like about this. One of the things that you and I like about this so much is that it's a discovery process.
So I guess we should get a little bit more, let people like stop listening to us for a bit and hear Roger Connors. What do you think?
Yes. Now, again, Roger Connor is the curator for Vertical Flight. He is with the Smithsonian's National Air and Space Museum. David and I were down there for, well, it's an annual event renamed this year to the Innovations in Flight Family Day and Outdoor Aviation Display. And we recorded a number of interviews for Airplane Geeks. But we did a couple of interviews that are UAV related, and the one that we're going to bring you this episode is from Roger Connor. So, unless you can think of something else, David, let's listen to our conversation with Roger.
This is David, and we're at the Innovation of Flight at the Udvar-Hazy Center at the Smithsonian for Innovations of Flight Day 15, and we have a friend of the UAV Digest and our resident historian for UAVs for the Smithsonian, Roger Connor. Roger, thanks for being on UAV Digest again.
Thank you, David. Pleasure to be here.
So last year we were talking with you and we were talking about, start off with, let's get a follow-up. You had asked our listeners if we could find a DJI Phantom. So did you find one yet for the museum?
We did. So we did accept our first DJI Phantom this past year. Huh. So we had a nice one that was donated by the wonderful folks at the Center for the Study of the Drone at Bard College.
Oh, excellent.
And what was significant about it?
Well, unfortunately, with the Phantom, really what we were looking for was the kind of the ubiquity of it. So we were happy just to have a kind of a standard stock first generation Phantom. That was really nice to have. So circa early 2013 Phantom was really what we were looking for.
Is it on display at this point?
Not yet. So hopefully soon down here at the south end of the museum, we'll have a little display where we'll have the Dragon Flyer X4ES, the one that the Mounties used to save a life back in May of 2013, kind of an important first for a public service UAV. We'll have the DJI in there, and we've got a couple others that we're hopefully looking at here fairly soon.
And as we were talking before we came on the show, you had some rejects too this year. What did you turn down?
Yeah, so as it would, obviously the way things are going these days, there are a lot of UAVs out there. Some of them are small and some of them are quite large, and that has its own set of challenges. So X-47B program is wrapped up this year. Navy's looking for a home for those. X-47B, of course, is a kind of a fascinating program. In terms of first fully autonomous carrier-borne flight, all the way from catapult launch, fully autonomous to fully autonomous tanking and trapping aboard the carrier. Pretty significant. However, it's not the end-all be-all of Navy unmanned systems. Of course, we've got to figure out what happens with the U-class program, which is going to be the follow-on. X-47 didn't drop any bombs, so it's a little bit difficult for us to take an aircraft of that size. You know, that's a development program for something that's a bit more sophisticated. So given our space limitations, we're looking kind of further out at acquiring something that's going to be really filling that full mission envelope for what X-47B represents. So that U-class program, which is not only carrier operations, but actually delivering the ordnance or flying the operational sorties. And that's really what we'd be looking for down the road. The other big one that we were offered was a Global Hawk. I think we'd be happy to have a Global Hawk here at some point, but we need to have the right one. So the ones that are being offered right now are kind of the early ones, a little bit light on their operational history, so we'd like something that's a little bit more significant given the space that's involved. And that's the real challenge here at the museum, is you kind of have to balance that history versus the resources committed to it, and both those aircraft are really big.
Yeah, and that goes to something that we talked about earlier today, which is for the listeners to the UAV Digest, that the museum here requires that there be some historical or some significance to each of the aircraft or items on display. It's not just a matter of, oh, here's an old airplane, you know, let's put it in the museum. There needs to be some kind of significance to the craft.
Absolutely, and right behind us here, we actually have a Navy Hellcat that was acquired for the museum, not because of its significance as a World War II fighter, but because it was the first naval aircraft drone for use in atomic clouds. So it was flown through both the Able and Baker clouds as a drone during World War II.
Interesting.
But they don't have her painted up that way.
No, we need to get it painted in its vintage orange.
Out of my favorite, I always like the one with the pink tail, because each one of the drones had its own colored tail to tell you what frequency those Hellcats were. So the one I built when I was a kid was, I built the red one with the pink tail, because bubblegum pink as an airplane color is just not something you see every day.
No.
So let's talk a little bit about the future. What else are you looking forward to possibly wanting to acquire, or what do you see on the horizon?
Well, we have the Scan Eagle probably in the fairly near future we're looking at. We're also talking with Dragonflyer about getting one of the first U.S. domestic police UAVs, an X-6, for them. So that in the short term, looking at those two, I'm sure we'll have something fairly significant coming up before too long as well.
So, Roger, do you do any flying yourself?
So I used to be a fixed-wing flight instructor. I finished that career about 2001. So I had about 4,000 hours, 3,500 dual given or so. So yeah, I had a pretty good run fixed wing flying. I did a commercial or a transition for rotary wing I didn't quite finish it before I ran out of money, so at some point I need to go back and finish that private helicopter.
But have you started flying quadcopters yet?
So I have I got a Parrot when they first came out, so I had an AR drone when they first came out, and still fly more or less the toys. I haven't quite been willing to put the money up for the Phantom. I live just outside the flight restricted zone here in D.C., so I could probably get away with it where I am, but a lot of trees in the neighborhood and everything else, so I'm not real comfortable, you know, kind of flying it from the front yard sort of thing. The AR drone is okay, kind of ducking and weaving between the bushes, but I'd be a little uncomfortable with the Phantom kind of just in the environment that I'm in.
Yep, some people have constraints. David, you do where you live.
Yeah, well, I'm within a quarter of a mile of an international airport, so I'm not flying anything. I'm not flying anything. I joke that the FAA calls me up every time I fly my little Aztec inside the house because of violating the airspace. But Roger, again, thank you so much for being on the show and being a friend of the show. We love following up with you and find out, you know, that UAVs are an important part of the Smithsonian now, and the big exhibit downtown, hanging from the ceiling with the Predator and
X-45 and the Dark Star and Pioneer and Shadow.
So, I mean, it's definitely, we really appreciate it, and we hope to see you again next year.
Thank you.
Thanks, Roger. So, David, it was great to see Roger again. I know that they're very excited about the developments with regard to unmanned exhibits at the National Air and Space Museum.
Yeah, and that was kind of fun listening to him break all the rules as far as the Smithsonian goes about, I've always joked that, you know, in order for something to be in the Smithsonian, it has to be really special. So what does Roger tell us? He says, oh, well, the DJI Phantom is just a DJI Phantom for all intents and purposes. That's what we wanted, just the basic one. So I thought it was kind of funny going against what we already knew or what I know as tradition at the Smithsonian.
In that sense, it's almost like that particular Phantom doesn't individually have any particular unusual significance, but just the class, you know, the Phantom. Kind of taking the country by storm. That's sort of the significant part of it. So it's cool that they have that in there. And we need to get downtown to the other museum facility. I guess he mentioned what they have, a Predator down there, the X-45.
They have a neat collection at the west end of the museum, hanging at various levels, multi-level display. It's a really neat exhibit, and it sounds like there's more to come.
So, speaking of more to come, next episode we'll bring you another interview. This one is with Princess Leia Pandolfi, and she's from the Kashmir World Foundation, doing some interesting things with drones, particularly in the area of dealing with poachers. So we'll look forward to bringing that to you next week.
Yeah, that was a really fun interview to do, and you guys will enjoy it. And we also, there's also an aspect of her educating people on drones and UAVs. So yes. Stay tuned for that. So Max, did you think we'd actually last 100 episodes?
No. I thought, you know, some podcasts just kind of can go on forever. Maybe Airplane Geeks is an example of that with, 355 or 6 episodes by the time this comes out. But there are other podcasts where, you know, the topic gets talked about, and after a certain number of episodes, you kind of can't say anything more about that topic. And so, you know, rather than beat a dead horse, you just sort of close down the show. I don't see this happening with us at all.
Yeah, we have way too much fun doing this on our Thursday night recordings. So I guess I should say thank you for catering to my whim when I came up with this ludicrous idea that we should do a show about UAVs. For all people don't know is I'm the lightweight. I don't do the majority of the work for the show. I do the gathering of the notes, and I try to answer people's emails and stuff, but the real editing and the real masterwork is done by Max. So I'm very lucky. I get to be sort of lazy And when I get sick, he covers for me, and he's a really good friend to have. And this is more a labor of love than it is work, as far as I'm concerned. So thank you, Max, for everything you do for the show and for me.
My pleasure, David. It's a delight to do this with you. Your knowledge is vast. Also, you have a much better memory than I do. So the things that I can't remember, you can recall instantly.
And folks, that means things like reminding him to turn on the recorder and stuff like that. That's where I come in really handy.
Yeah, David does the countdown checklist. It gets this thing rolling. We should also mention Drone Mama and thank her for doing the show notes and the WordPress stuff. That really takes a big load off of us. She's also a much better editor than we are. I tend to just print it, let it go. Whereas she's very strong in terms of fact checking and making sure that titles and links are proper, and that really is important because it it speaks to the quality of the show that we put out. So thanks to her. And David, we should also thank our sponsors.
Yes, Max, we should thank our sponsors. We'd like to thank Go Engineer and UAV Propulsion Tech for their help. Goes a long way. This show doesn't magically appear by itself, but we do appreciate it. And we got to meet Ken Colburn of Go Engineer down at the Smithsonian, and it was a pleasure to meet him. And he's actually a fan as well as a sponsor, so that was kind of fun. And also, we need to thank all of our patrons who it may seem like you're donating a dollar and it may seem like much to you, but goes a long way to things for servers and microphones and being able to go to the Smithsonian to bring you additional things. And hopefully we'll be able to do more of that in the next 100 episodes.
Absolutely. So, David, I think we should wrap this one up. We want to thank all of you for listening for the last 100 episodes, for those of you that have. And for our new listeners, welcome. We're happy to have you and hope you'll stick with us for the next 100. You can find us at the UAVDigest.com. Show notes for this episode are at the UAVDigest.com/100.
If you'd like to reach out to us, you could send us some feedback at feedback@theuavdigest.com. Or if you just want to speak to either Max or me, just it's David or Max at theuavdigest.com. If you'd like to be a part of the show, you can become a patron or you can buy some swag. And if you really love us, you can leave a review on iTunes. That helps other people find us. And of course, we have our Facebook page, which is UAV Digest, and our Twitter account, which is UAV Digest. It's been great to do 100 episodes. And I think I'll sign off saying it's David in Philly.
And Max in Hartford.
Thank you for listening.